Welcome to the FTN Fantasy Baseball Podcast with your co-hosts Matthew Davis and Matt Kupferle.
Welcome to episode 35 of the FTN Fantasy Baseball Podcast. I'm your co-host Matt Kupferle, and before we get started, we did want to give a quick shout out to Underdog Best Ball. Underdog Best Ball is one of the best plays to place some MLB best ball, daily drafts, etc. There's no trades, no setting your lineup, just have the most fun of the season, draft your team, and win. There's two tournaments going live right now, a $50,000 and a $25,000 tournament, and there's NBA and NHL up and running, and soon we'll have MLB going. There's a daily battle royale that we're excited about. So please go check out our friends over at Underdog Best Ball and use promo code FTN with a money-back guarantee. As we get started, episode 35, we've had a lot of fun drafting TGFBI. We've had some tag team drafts. Maddie Wood and Brockness, what's going on, guys? How are you?
Doing good. Ready to talk some more baseball.
Yeah, man, I'm good. It's definitely in the thick of drafting season. I've got four drafts going at one time right now and really no end in sight for these last 2 weeks before the season kicks off.
Brock, are you doing DCs or what are you doing right now?
I have three DCs, which is just a shit ton to keep in order. I don't know how you guys go about drafting your DCs, but I definitely have a spreadsheet in each team, and I populate it as I draft somebody. I populate the spreadsheet with the players that I'm drafting, with their projections, okay. And I keep an overall, you know, like keep an average. Like, yeah. Okay, I'm looking for an average of 24 home runs, and right now I'm at 26, but it's early in the draft, so that's going to tail off. I keep track of all of that shit as I draft each of those three. Nice. And then, of course, the last of those is the Raz Slam, which is okay. A cut line. So a little bit different. Something that I kind of do, I just kind of have been sticking with the DC, something that kind of feels like it's in my wheelhouse, something that I do best with.
Sure.
So I just try to, you know, stay in my wheelhouse with the ones that I'm set up to work through the best. And so I'm mostly doing those right now.
Awesome. Maddie, what do you got going on right now? I know you're in TGFBI. If you're not in the world's slowest draft like mine is, which is still going, is TGFBI still going for you? What do you got going on? You got Raz Slam or anything else?
Unfortunately, my TGFBI league is still going. That and Raz Slam, I have that going on. That league's moving swiftly. That one is 42 rounds, though, and it's a best ball, and it's similar to the NFBC cut line, but they stretch it out to 12 teams versus 10 teams, so it's a little, it's definitely a unique contest, but I am excited to be a part of it, so definitely grinding that out. And then I have my first NFBC main event on March 21st.
Ooh, girl.
That's the NFBC opening weekend. I know they're going to be kicking off in Chicago and then in New York, and then there will be drafts held online for the main event. So on March 20th, I'll be hosting our second annual NFBC main event opening party. So I'll have a bunch of guests come on in different segments, and we'll just basically dissect any and all NFBC main event draft boards that are available to us.
Yeah, I'm looking forward to that. We had a lot of fun, Maddie, me and you did last year. Obviously, I'm too big of a bitch to enter a main event, but you are not. But I did have fun breaking it down with you last year. Tons of fun. Reach out to me, Maddie Brock, if you want to be part of the dialogue. I know there's some great people participating. Be tons of fun. John Posma challenged me to drive up to Chicago to enter into the main event there. I think he just wants to take my money, so I'm a little bit scared of him right now. But no, all is good. Looking forward to a ton of fun. And as we dive in, a little bit of news that we wanted to cover first to kick the show off. So I'll start off by kicking it to you, Brock. Some big news today about Sixto Sanchez of the Marlins. Delayed a little bit coming out of camp with COVID-19. Looks like he began a throwing program, but we saw some rumblings with the Marlins rotation. So, Brock, start with you. As far as Sixto is concerned, were you a buyer before the news? And what have you learned or gleaned from the news that is influencing you right now?
Yeah, so what they're saying is he's in kind of a wait-and-see mode. He's going to throw a bullpen on Thursday, so it's not like he's not throwing at all. It kind of feels like to me, like this is probably not going to be too big of a deal. You know, worst case scenario, it's the first 2 weeks of the season that maybe he's not going to start then. You know, so to answer your question, I wasn't really on Sixto Sanchez beforehand. I mean, he was a lot of fun to watch when he debuted last year. Really enjoyed that. But it was kind of one of those things where when everybody's going to put all their marbles into one basket based on, like, you know, five or six starts, you know, just based on the range of outcomes that we see, I just tend to pivot from there. You know, there's guys that are being drafted around Sixto that, you know, you pretty much know what you're going to get. And, you know, you're going to be drafting Sixto hoping that you can get that. You know, there's definitely upside there. But so I was kind of out before. So this doesn't really, you know, change a lot for me now, unless it really becomes a thing where it pushes him down the list a little bit. Then my ears might perk up a little bit there. Yeah, I think if this is kind of worrying you with Sixto, then that's weird, just because, you know, I don't know how many innings you were expecting him to pitch in the first place. And if, you know, missing 12 innings in the first 2 weeks of the season is changing your mind, then I don't know where you were really standing before.
Yeah, fair point. How about you, Matthew? Similar thoughts or anything different?
I think that he's going to be – the plan is for the Marlins is for him to be ready to go in mid-April. So they're going to call him up right after the surface time, and they don't even really need a fifth starter. 2 days off in the first 9 days, and they already have an innings limit cap for him coming into this season, which was we were all well aware of. But I'm in the buyer's market for Sixto Sanchez. I have a couple of shares already. My projections have him underneath 150 innings pitched as it is, so I think that I'm already right on par with what I was already looking at. And if anything, hopefully his NFBC ADP drops a little bit. Yeah, he's real close in the wheelhouse, same as Pablo Lopez and Sandy Alcantara. So maybe he slides, you know, around two rounds below that. So if that does occur, then I could look at it as a buying opportunity.
So Matthew, it sounds like you were already kind of factoring that in. Is that a fair assessment to when you are doing your projections and things like that? Is that right?
Yeah, absolutely. So some people, I mean, maybe people thought that he was going to be, you know, part of the opening day team and then just go. I can't speak for others, but knowing the landscape and how teams are, you know, attacking young starters, you have to be aware of that. And there's going to – the thing that does not concern me, though, is I think that the, you know, lump sum of innings pitched around the league per average in a starter – isn't going to be like we've talked about the 170, 180, 190, you know, with the top tier two, top tier horses going 200 plus. Those numbers are all going to dip down a little bit, not too much, but I think they are going to dip down a little bit. And so once you get that scale going down, it helps mitigate some of the volume that they aren't going to have. Somebody like Sixto Sanchez, or, you know, maybe even somebody like Julio Urias, Dustin May, Tony Gonsolin, Mike Soroka, sure. All of these guys. These are all good pitchers, and these are all pitchers that could give you potentially good ratios. And so I'm not going to shy away from them.
Yeah, fair point. And I think one thing that we're trying to make sense of, which is a great segue, is moving to the Reds bullpen situation. So, fellas, I'll kick it over to Matthew to start. Matthew, we're hearing, and we were probably a bit confused, you know, great numbers last year in the shortened season, both from a guy like Amir Garrett, who hasn't thrown yet this spring training, but also we're looking at Lucas Sims, who was just lights out in a reliever role. With Amir Garrett, presumed closer, or at least for me, in the couple of drafts I've done so far, it's been Amir Garrett first, Lucas Sims shut down with a little bit of an elbow injury. How are we sorting out this bullpen, and are we buying at all, or are we just shying away?
If the season began today, I guess you would have to say it's who's ever healthy, and it's neither Amir Garrett nor Lucas Sims. On the bright side of things for Lucas Sims, he threw 10 fastballs in a short box drill yesterday, which is like throwing off the mound to a catcher, and that was from beat reporter Trent Rosencrantz. The reports with Amir Garrett are pretty worrisome, with it being, you know, with his forearm. That's, you know, usually or sometimes a precursor to Tommy John. He hasn't been throwing yet. And all he's doing is flat ground right now. And he's scheduled to have a bullpen session tomorrow. So it's a wait and see approach for me. But I, you know, maybe we shouldn't be overreacting to Lucas Sims' injury, and maybe we should be doing that for Amir Garrett. Because as of right now, if you had to ask me, I think it almost sounds like, you know, Garrett is sure the one that should be the more concern here. And if that's the case, and Lucas Sims is like, he's just nosedived in drafts since all of the news that came out with him a month ago. His current NFBC ADP and draft champions over the last 2 weeks is 374. He's if you're somewhere in that range right now and he's still available, maybe he's somebody you look to pounce on if you're wanting to take a closer speculation.
Right. Brock, what do you think? Are you do you have any Garrett shares? Do you have any Sims shares? Do you have anybody else? What are you thinking there?
Yeah, previously I didn't. I was attacking closer a little bit differently in these leagues, and these leagues kind of the leagues that I'm drafting in kind of give you that opportunity to do so. Just kind of take some dirt throws late and still be able to feel good enough about things. But, you know, with this news, I mean, this is pretty serious. We're 3 weeks away from opening day at this point. And if Amir Garrett really hasn't pitched, you know, hasn't been on the mound, that's definitely something there. So Sims was somebody that I think was at least on our radar even beforehand. And if, you know, if Garrett's having trouble getting into games, then seems like there's some money to be made with Sims for sure. You know, an interesting thing with Carrasco, and I'm sure everybody saw the tweets, you know, everybody that gets traded away from the Indians ends up hurt. And, you know, I don't know anything about that. I really couldn't, you know, speak on it. I mean, there is definitely an interesting correlation there. You know, Clevinger gets to San Diego and throws like four innings and he's hurt. You know, Kluber has been hurt since he left. I mean, his was a little bit of a freak injury, like two innings into his season or whatever. A little bit different, but kind of an interesting thing there. But I remember this was I read from one of the beat writers that Carrasco was actually late arriving to camp with the Mets this year. I saw this a couple of days ago. He got to camp late because of additional medical screening. Like there was already something there that they were looking at. So definitely kind of worries me with Carrasco because, I mean, I've drafted him in quite a few leagues. I've just kind of found myself being comfortable, you know, getting one ace and letting everybody else spend on two aces. And he's been kind of my cheap way to try to get like a quasi ace, you know, later on in those first, you know, handful of rounds. So quite exposed to Carrasco. Not really happy to hear that.
This concerns me big time, big time. Major red flags. If we flip back the pages to when the Cleveland Indians got rid of him for free, is what people were saying, right? Wow, they just threw in Carlos Carrasco. The Indians know what they're doing when it comes to, you know, managing starting pitching, evaluating starting pitching, adjusting to what they have or what they're willing to get rid of. And more times than not, they're right. You know, maybe they're not right, you know, financially on how they want to look at some of these things. But when it comes to an evaluation perspective, they know what they are doing. And so now we are just getting continuous negative news. And now it's not going to be a spring training game. Now it's just going to be live bullpen. And there's elbow soreness that cropped up. And now he might not be ready for opening day. These things, they're all little, you know, paper trails to leading to a disaster, in my opinion. And when you're investing this sort of draft capital this early as your SP2, it's a huge concern for me. I've moved him down my ranking since to a place where I will not be drafting him. I do not know how the industry is going to react as a whole. I'm sure maybe right now in DCs or something like that, any drafts that are currently going on, because it's recent news, you're likely going to see him dip just a little bit maybe. But if he does start throwing these live BPs and does get into a spring training game at some point, even though he's behind, people are going to start to maybe think that it's okay. And if anything, even in some main events, some people might be willing to take that risk, and then they might even be willing to pay even more for that risk. But it's just definitely something that I'm not willing to do. And unfortunately, I'm a big fan of Cookie, but I am out this year.
Yeah, I mean, he's going as SP 20 off the board. that's a hefty price to pay. I mean, that's in a 12-teamer, that's obviously your, you know, a solid SP2. But in the main event, you, as Matthew, you've detailed, that, you know, pitching gets pushed up. You could see some teams maybe with an alternate build that make, you know, cookie their SP1. Certainly a challenge to get there. So something, you know, to keep an eye on in general. You know, another arm that we're worried about, Kirby Yates, reliever, presumed closer, obviously, for the Blue Jays. Looks like maybe it's a bit of positive news. You know, the elbow surgery was considered very minor. How are you guys looking at – it feels like there's a very clear delineation for closers of the top five. Top five being, obviously, you know, Josh Hader, Liam Hendricks, Edwin Diaz, Rossy Iglesias, and Aroldis Chapman. And then there's a group that falls in there next. Are either of you guys, Matthew, start with you, Kirby Yates, are you a buyer, a seller? Are you waiting to see, you know, ball out of his hand in a spring training game? You know, where are you at with him?
I don't think I have much. I think I have a little bit, but I'm in. I'm in. I've listened to an interview with the manager of the Blue Jays, Montoyo, yep. And he's their guy. He is the ninth inning guy. He is their closer. He has specifically stated on the interview that if this was game seven, two outs in the World Series, or anything in between there, Kirby Yates is my closer. He did say if healthy. He's expected to start pitching this week, and he's going to be making his Grapefruit League debut tomorrow, and I'm excited. The crazy thing is if he's going to go out and pitch fine, I'm assuming, and if all reports are good, I think that he's going to rise quite a bit, and I already have him slotted above Kenley Jansen, Brad Hand, Craig Kimbrell, James Karinchak, etc. So for me, I'm ready to buy in on him. Obviously, if things go wrong tomorrow, that will change. Sure. But that's not why I'm not drafting main events right now. But if all goes as I expect, I'm definitely in on Kirby Yates.
Yeah, not fair to hold you that. Obviously, you know, right? And for anybody else that isn't aware, Maddie does an unbelievable job with a detailed set of projections over at FTN. Check it out. It's part of our MLB package for a scintillating $19.99. Use promo code CUP, promo code Davis. Brock, you got a promo code that I can shout out for you either? Is it Beard? Promo code Beard, is that right?
I'm I'm sure I do have one, but I'd have to go onto the Slack thing that I still have yet to be able to figure out how to really use.
Than me, Brock. Jesus. Yeah.
What's that?
No, but Matt, got Kirby Yates for 27 saves, so you're clearly a believer. Great ratios. Please, though, seriously, go check out Maddie's work. It's an invaluable resource. Sign up behind the paywall. It is honestly worth $20. Worth way more than that. But Matt, his numbers, you know, in your mind, are lights out, and so I think it's fair. Brock, are you a Kirby Yates believer? Are you hesitant? Where are you at with Kirby Yates?
I feel like I've done the same maneuver that Maddie has here. I've gone from all out to all in. As soon as I saw that those reports were so minor that it was just a little bit of a cleanup, some loose bodies in the elbow, and the UCL was completely intact, I mean, I changed my mind. So
fair enough.
So one thing too is, these are the type of guys, it's not going to be Liam Hendricks or Josh Hader or Aroldis Chapman. Though you're statistically speaking, in historical overall data, looking at like top 10 teams in any format that's a Roto 5x5, like the year, I know Jeff Erickson's talked about, you know, the year Edwin Diaz broke the saves record and just had a smashing season. There was like one team in the top 20 overall in the main event that had Edwin Diaz.
Yeah, it's, I heard the same
it's
thing.
The guys that are going, you know, a little bit below there or even below there. And I think Kirby Yates could be in a sweet spot this year. And these are the type of guys that'll help win you a league for sure if things pan out right.
Yeah, absolutely. Two more news before we get into kind of the meat of the show. We're going to talk about Rangers bullpen and Joey Votto, but let's stick in bullpen arms. Bad news for me, guys. I was all in on Jonathan Hernandez of the Rangers bullpen. Diagnosed with a UCL sprain, likely out at least 4 to 6 weeks, as Maddie highlighted earlier. UCL's brand's kiss of death. I am terrified. He's probably an early cut for me in teams. What are you guys thinking about just that overall bullpen? I mean, so Jose Leclerc, you know, posted some crazy numbers in 2019 late with a ton of strikeouts, but a little bit wild. You got, you know, Jonathan Hernandez is out. I think we've got Joely Rodriguez could be there as well. How are we sorting this pen out in Texas if we're, you know, taking a dart? Are we buying in on Jose Leclerc, or what are we doing, Maddie? Well, let's start with you.
Well, he's one of the few guys – I haven't adjusted his projection in, you know, since I've done it. And he's one of the few guys that I actually have projected to have a 20-plus save threshold here.
Okay.
And this was before the Jonathan Hernandez news. I didn't think that they were going to even want to use Jonathan Hernandez in the closer role. I was thinking maybe in a high-leverage situation.
Sure, yeah.
So this is another – there's been a couple of things. You know, I wasn't in on Framber Valdez, and not to toot, you know, any my horn or anything like that, just because the main events haven't begun yet. But a lot of people that have been cropping up negatively in the news have kind of – I've been out on. And, you know, unfortunately, I can't take advantage of that. But, with Hernandez, as of right now, you just – I slashed his entire projection in half already.
Okay.
But that's just for now, and I don't think he's gonna pitch this year. Unfortunately, if you mentioned Rodriguez, I suppose that would be the guy in competition with Leclerc. So I would go there for you know the next man up sort of thing there.
All right, so Brock, I'll put you on the spot. Jose Leclerc, or are you gonna buy into maybe a mixed bullpen of, let's say, the Tigers with Joe Jimenez, Brian Garcia, and Gregory Soto? Which one would you pick? Leclerc, who looks like he's got the job, but maybe a bit shaky, or one of those guys?
Yeah, no, this is a different situation, in my opinion, than what the Tigers have going in Detroit. You know, Detroit, it's just a bunch of Indians standing around, and there's really no chief there. In Texas, you've got Jose Leclerc. He's been the closer the last, like, 2 years. They signed him to a multi-year deal, despite the 13% walk rate or whatever he's posted the last 2 years. You know, despite that, he's been the guy, and he's also, I think he's, you know, most well-suited for the job there in Texas. Joely Rodriguez, you know, looks pretty good, but he's only got 1 year in the big, so we don't really know what we have with him. Jose Leclerc is actually a couple years younger than Joely Rodriguez, funny enough, but... you know, for me, you know, Rodriguez is left-handed. I think he might be able to snag, you know, 4 or 5 saves by the end of the season or something like that. Maybe Rodriguez is worth that 48th round pick if you're doing a DC, but, otherwise, bump up Leclerc a little bit. I think he's just a little bit safer with that job now.
Maddie, what about you in a role, in a bullpen? I'll give you a different question. A guy like Leclerc that seems locked in, or a bit of a confusing situation, let's say a bullpen I'm still trying to sort out with the Minnesota Twins with Alex Colome and Taylor Rogers. I know you see that as a bit of a split-time situation too. Are you a Leclerc guy, or would you take a twin arm?
Well, yeah, I'd probably take Leclerc. I have Colome slightly ranked ahead of Leclerc, but – now with the Hernandez news, I think maybe I'll move. You know, there's less competition, and that goes to say something right now when you've heard Rocco Baldelli, the Minnesota Twins manager, talk about having this saves pie be, you know, multiple mouths are going to be fed from it. So I think that Leclerc could potentially, we have seen him take the job fully once, and there's just not many people there to fight with him, and he's had it before, so the experience is there, and I would just go with him. And he's going to go, you know, a lot later than both of those Minnesota guys, actually. So you've got Colome's ADP over the last 2 weeks is 148. Yeah. Taylor Rogers, his ADP is 191. And then you have Jose Leclerc over at 237. So that's a significant discount, 3 to 5 rounds there. And that's kind of, you know, what I'd like to do there. If both of them are coming with some sort of uncertainty, then just give me the cheaper guy.
Yeah. No, and I agree with you both. You know what's nuts? In my TGFBI draft, Colome and Rogers of the Twins both were available after pick 300. I think everybody was scared on what to do there, but it was weird. I mean, they were both there. It was kind of like I thought maybe something happened that I didn't know about it. But, I mean, I think great points by both of you guys. Last bit of news and notes before we kind of dive into the meat and potatoes, before we turn over to Brock to kind of run his baby with this, you know, idea, which I think is going to be pretty important. Joey Votto came down with COVID-19, a bit ambiguous as far as what was going on, just placed on the injured list. I think we all were nervous and afraid. I saw this happen with the Reds last year. Brock, let's start with you. Joey Votto, kind of a sneaky late-round target, had a banner like 6 weeks to end the season. What are you doing with Votto, what did you think about him before this news, and are you drafting him now, or are you changing anything?
Yeah, so with Votto, he was already so underpriced, in my opinion. There's another guy that we're getting some news on in spring training that I already have an awful lot of exposure to. So I was not happy to learn of this. I've kind of learned of it now. The last couple of days have been pretty busy for me, and I haven't been on Twitter a whole lot like I normally am. So this news is a little bit surprising to me. And, you know, my first reaction is that with the COVID, we saw a couple guys last year that didn't show hardly any effects from it. You know, Freddie Freeman obviously comes to mind. He won an MVP. But then there's definitely guys like I believe it was Moncada, you know, said that he struggled, you know, coming back from it quite a bit there. So I think, you know, Joey Votto was at a great price and everything. But when you just change his, you know, update his kind of range of outcomes, and one of his ranges of outcomes, if, you know, having an absolute dud of a season is, you know, maybe it's not a 10% chance anymore. Maybe that's like, you know, maybe that's in the 25th percentile outcome for Joey Votto now. I think that changes things. I think he's still priced cheaply enough. I mean, you're not really drafting him as your starting first baseman or anything. Yeah. I think in a lot of 12-team leagues, I don't even know how many of those he's going to show up in. I think he's going to be on a lot of benches there anyway. So he's definitely a guy that, you know, I think you can grab and leave on your bench and then kind of see how things go and, you know, hope you've got the Freddie Freeman version of the COVID comeback.
So, Matthew, I wanted to get your opinion on this because Brock brought up a really good point. And certainly, let's be very clear, we all are trying to figure out, you know, we're going to deal with another season where COVID is going to be an impact. Certainly, no, you know, we all, none of us are doctors, don't know how this affects. But, Matthew, I am curious from a projection perspective. For Joey Votto specifically, now that you know that he is diagnosed with COVID, or Shane Bieber, for example, many others, when you look at publishing your projections, do you have any way to factor that in and the really detailed work that you do? Because I know – well, let me step back. I think I have an idea of how much time it takes you. I know it takes a lot more time than I can imagine. But how do you factor this in, especially – with people on the fly, as like you said, main event drafts have not started. They're about to start. How do you do this in a projection kind of environment?
Well, it's all about timing for each one or each individual. And so like with Shane Bieber, I'm not going to wait or adjust anything because he's back up to, you know, close to being par with everybody else. So for me, I have to assume that all the skills and everything else are still intact there. It's going to be close with Joey Votto as well. So he's got, you know, the 10 days away from the team. Hopefully everything goes well for him there. I haven't read much into his symptoms or how he is feeling. One interesting thing is this the first Canadian like ever to get COVID? I know that they're handling this much better than America is. So yeah. So Joey Votto had, you know, left winter in Canada and came back to America, and there you go. He gets COVID, unfortunately, but hopefully he is okay health-wise first and foremost. But there's a couple things. So let's say I do not adjust his projection. Let's say that he comes back, he's able to ramp up, and he's almost like a Freddie Freeman. Let's just, you know, not in the similar production, but able to produce at what you're thinking he's supposed to do or whatever capable level he's at. Brock mentioned the different range in outcomes now because of this, which does increase the floor. So that is a concern. But he's somebody now that he was already going so late where he's probably going to go even later. So maybe now you're drafting him as, you know, one of your reserve, you know, reserve hitters off of the bench to be your backup CI or something like that. And if that's the case, then I think you should take the shot. So I have not adjusted his projection yet, but I'm going to read you his projection that I do have along with his ADP over the last 2 weeks. That is 307. And I have projected for Joey Votto 86 runs, 22 home runs, 91 RBI, 3 stolen bases with a 260 average. Now, if you look at another first baseman in the same division going at pick 105, which is 200-plus picks earlier, that's Anthony Rizzo. Yes, and I have him projected for 89 runs, 28 home runs, 89 RBI, 6 stolen bases, and a 269 average. So if you put them underneath each other, yes, exactly. And I think I even almost tweeted something of that, you know, sort out of when I was doing my projections. So I like the team context better offensively. I like the ballpark better for Cincinnati, better than Wrigley Field. So there's a couple things that are in favor for Votto as a whole. I know that he was wanting to sell off for power, and it looks like what he was saying was actually coming true at the end of last season. So I'm going to continue to believe all of those things as of right now. And if he does fall to the 28th, 29th, 30th round in a main event, yeah, I'm willing to take that shot. And if it doesn't work out, and you're going to be able to – you'll see. You see facial expressions, especially from Joey Votto, and he's a very openly expressive person. So he's going to let you know how he feels. Sure. Yeah, so he's the man. And so, yeah, I'm in on Votto. I hope that he feels well, and if he does, gimme.
Yeah. No, I get it. And he's a guy that I've actually been looking at a bunch. He's an interesting character for sure. Again, all jokes aside, and we like to tease a ton, we hope everything's fine with Joey Votto. I'm sure he'll be okay. You know, we hope that's where it's going. If he comes back and he is anything like what he did at the end of the season, he's going to be awesome, right? So all looking forward to that. I think he's a great pick. I like him a lot, and maybe this even helps his draft day cost fall a bit. Great corner position for sure. So totally get it. Brock, why don't we dive in? You had a great topic as far as just understanding draft day capital and some unique picks on how we get there. You want to dive into that topic for the meat and potatoes?
Sort of. I also kind of want to add one more note on Joey Votto. You know, he was
Brock.
Our friend Vlad did the podcast last year with Casey Cha, one of the most successful DC or just NFBC drafters in NFB history. And, you know, a strategy that he had kind of honed in on was just, you know, going through the list and crossing some guys off, you know, that kind of thing, kind of zeroing in on your guys there. And so this is kind of something that I took a look at. I did a little bit of research for our podcast here tonight. And it kind of ties in a little bit with Joey Votto. Joey Votto is somebody that, you know, like Maddie said, this is the same thing as Anthony Rizzo. You know, I was looking at Joey Votto as being like, here's where I'm getting my corner infielder. Here's where I'm getting my utility guy. Like the chances that I get burned on this pick are like less than 10%. Like there's just, even if he doesn't have a great year, he still pays off that super cheap price. I think you said 307 over the last 2 weeks. And even that's coming up because before that he was getting drafted even later than that. So I was kind of zeroing in on Votto. I got like way too many notes written down here that I kind of prepared for this thing. So I'm shifting through here. So with that said, something that I had identified in looking at some of the top lineups in draft champions leagues. These are, you know, kind of the, I looked at like the top 10 finishers from draft champions last year and definitely saw some correlations there. And I think, you know, more towards the end of the podcast here, if we've got a little bit of time, I kind of want to go through a couple of those trends that I noticed there. But one big thing that stuck out to me that I wanted us to take a look at, and I wanted the three of us to make our picks. I noticed that most teams had a guy in that 80th overall to say 125th, 140th overall range where they took a pitcher that they ended up getting, you know, like a top 40, you know, player out of when there's a lot of profit there in, like, say their seventh round pitcher, you know. So last year that guy happened to be Yu Darvish, and, you know, it wasn't really a secret. I don't know if you weren't on Twitter, it might have been a little bit of a secret. But I think the community as a whole was talking an awful lot about Yu Darvish, and it was an obvious situation with Yu Darvish, right? He made changes in his process somewhere in the middle of the 2019 season. And after that, he didn't just like revert to the ace version of Yu Darvish that we saw in Texas for the 5 years previous. He took a step forward. He reached for another gear, a whole new level of Yu Darvish. And he was absolutely amazing in the second half of 2019, if I recall accurately, only 7 walks. And so the teams that took a chance on him, you know, early on in the season, I think maybe he was 8th, 9th round. And towards the, you know, Maddie can correct me here. I'm going to defer to him in a second here. I think by the end, right up there at the end of spring training, Yu Darvish was creeping up more into like the 6th round, like maybe even the 5th round, right, Matt?
Yeah, unfortunately, though, in main events, it ended up being like the 3rd or 4th.
Was it that high?
Those draft champions. Yeah, because the season got shorter, right? So some of those draft champions leagues, you had some of those going on when we thought there was a full season, you know, there was a lot of uncertainties, and then we got the news of COVID and the short season, and so people kind of readjusted their evaluations, and he started to pop a little bit. But for the most part, though, in draft champions, and I mean, those drafts do go on for 6+ months or whatever. And, he was going where you are saying, but, he slowly did start to creep up in the main events.
Okay. So more helium than I thought he'd gotten, which was, already, I was thinking quite significant. So that said, Yu Darvish, the guys that were, you know, drafting Yu Darvish there got paid off. I think, you know, if you look at the draft, if you look at the dollar value produced, you know, Razzball does a great job of end of the season dollar values and stuff like that. You know, Yu Darvish produced like basically first round value out of, you know, whatever your SP2, your SP3 spot there. So Yu Darvish, and then the next one was there was like a real mid-range starting pitcher that a lot of teams drafted and ended up kind of getting an SP2 out of. And 2020's version of that, of course, was Corbin Burnes. Corbin Burnes was going mostly in like the 27th round, 28th round. I saw some where he was, you know, back in like the 33rd round even. And I'm sure there was a couple where he was a little bit higher than that, but that was about the range that he was in. And so big payoff there, obviously, when, you know, you draft somebody in the 27th round and you wind up with an $18 pitcher, a $20 pitcher. There's a lot of money to be made there. And then also, just for the sake of our exercise here, I wanted a kind of a dart throw. Each one of us to pick a little bit of a dart throw. Somebody, you know, going real late, you know, 45th round, if you're drafting in a DC or whatever, you know, kind of last guy on your bench and TGI, FBI, see if you can get that guy to stick on the opening day roster and catch lightning in a bottle. So I wanted each one of us to pick three of these guys. One of my guys is already kind of burned, and we'll kind of get to there. But Matthew, let's go with you. You can roll through all three if you'd like, or we can all start with our kind of 6th round pick guy and go from there. It's up to you.
Yeah, well, my guy's at ADP of 173, so let's start in that range.
Beautiful.
Mine is Zach Eflin with a min pick of 139 and a max of 200. So last year, let's start with the pitch mix. He, you know, decided to ditch the slider a little bit, which most of the time we like to see guys, you know, increase the usage of the slider. But his slider isn't really a good pitch, to be honest with you. So he increased the usage of the curveball, which ended up, you know, giving better results. We saw his K-minus walk rate spike to 22%+. The expected ERA went down to 3.45. He's age 27, and I think that he's just somebody that's kind of blossoming into his own right now. I do want to see maybe even a little bit more of the curveball going into 2021. And so I'm just kind of eager and anxious. I know Matt Modica even tweeted out something comparing him and teammate Zach Wheeler a little bit earlier. And if you kind of mirrored them together, it's like, wait a minute, who's the, you know, who has been pitching better and which one's younger and who's trending in the right direction? So last year, the curveball rate, it spiked. So in 2019, he threw it 5% of the time, which really isn't a pitch because it's, you know, sub 10%. You want to see at least a 10% usage there. It went up to 13.1, where the slider in 2019 was at 27.8%, and that dipped down in 2020 to 14.3%. We saw his swinging strike rate climb a little bit last year due to that. The strikeout rate is climbing as well. So last year we saw that jump all the way up to 28.6%, which is 10% or nearly 10% higher than his career. I think that that's something that's going to stick. He's got a phenomenal catcher behind the plate with him. He doesn't get barreled up. He doesn't get hit hard. I think that there's a lot to like here.
I like that one. Zach Eflin, definitely seen a little bit of buzz over the last week or so on Twitter on him. It'll be interesting to see that last couple days before the season starts. What's his ADP then? I think you're onto something there. I think it's going to be quite different than what it's been. Absolutely.
Real quick, his main event ADP is not going to be what it is right now. He's going to be one of those guys that, you know, yeah, you'll see some boards and go, whoa, he went there. I think, he's going to be, people are going to be fighting for him. Yeah, XFIP of 323, the Sierra was kind of, you know, right in line with that as well. He really is just one of those pitchers that's trending in the right direction, right? The Sierra was 3.50. He doesn't get hit hard at all. And he's starting to rack up the strikeouts. So it's just everything's trending right. He's 26, turning 27 next month. That's what you want, right? You know, somebody figuring out how to use their pitch mix, increasing some, decreasing some, strikeout rates increasing. He's phenomenal, too, by the way, walking guys. So he's going to keep your whip in line all day. He's not getting hit hard, so his BABIP's not going to be too screwy, which the funny thing is last year, while not getting hit hard, he had a BABIP of 344, okay, which is absurd, while still being, you know, and a 6.1% walk rate. I think that there's just a lot of goodness here to like.
Yeah, definitely something that I noticed with Eflin on Eno Saris's. He's got some data as far as quality of stuff and quality of command goes. And he has Zach Eflin 15% above average on quality command, which, you know, for context, I mean, there's like Pineda's like a 120. There's a couple guys in that 120 range. But, you know, Aaron Nola's a 119. But yeah, that 115 figure, I think, puts him in the 90th percentile for command. So definitely backs up what you're saying right there.
That's a good segue. I was going to pass it to you guys to pick another person. But my next guy is going in ADP of 445. So this is kind of both of my late round and dart throws. But it goes into the, you know, Eno Saris's as quality of stuff. Brubaker grades out at 104, so slightly above average there. And the command plus is at 112, real close to Zach Eflin as well. And I think that this is somebody, you know, pitching in a good park. He's going to get all the burn that he can get. Coming in, I think he's age 27 as well, or 26. There's just been a lot to like about him recently. I think he's getting a little bit of buzz as well. He's going really late. I've drafted him in the 29th round, 30th round of drafts. So JT Brubaker would be my like late round dart throw that I think could be, you know, somebody that doesn't kill you, but somebody that you just kind of notice you're rolling out there more times than not when you're setting when you're setting your 9 starting pitchers. He doesn't get hit hard. Yeah, he's just another guy that's real cheap that I don't think is going to really, really screw you over.
Yeah, that's interesting. I made a little bit of a list when I was picking my second guy, and I think I have 8 or 9 pitchers, and he was definitely one of them for a lot of those same reasons you saw. And I mean, you know, just taking a look at his page real quick here, you know, the home run rate, I mean, minuscule home run rates, You know, this is a guy, and you know, kind of contrary to some of the other guys that we're going to mention in this part here, I think he's definitely got a job, right?
Yeah, and he's not walking guys. So when you've got a combination of somebody that's not going to walk, you know, a lot of batters, he's not getting hit hard. He's not, you know, not a lot of people aren't getting lift on his ball. That's that alone, right? That's something you want. And this guy, he's still getting his feet wet in the majors. Last year was his first go about it. He only had 11 games, but he got 9 starts, which isn't too far off from the top dogs. I think they had like 12 or 13 max, you know, in the shortened season. He went 47 innings. He had a solid 23.4% strikeout rate. The FIP was 408. I don't think that's bad. The XFIP is in line with that at 414. You know, like I said, the division, we saw what the division was last year. We were making fun of how easy it was for all these central pitchers in the AL and NL to just mow through lineups. Well, now what happens? Yes, they're going to be facing other divisions, but now you got to bake in there's no DH in the NL, and he does get to pitch most of his games against NL Central opponents. So, yeah, I'm intrigued, and he's cheap. If it doesn't work out, fucking cut him.
Yeah, absolutely. He's not going to hurt anything. Just, you know, get him out of there if you need to. Okay, we're going to switch over and give him an opportunity. Mr. Kupferle, who you got for your first two guys?
Yep, so mine is I wrote an article about this in the offseason about old and boring people.
Yeah.
And my first is Marco Gonzalez, ADP of 168.77. Look, I'm usually very hard on former Cardinal players. I like Marco Gonzalez a lot. Not a ton of strikeouts. I do think what's interesting about Gonzalez, and this is in our tag team draft, we focus on guys that will build innings up. And Marco Gonzalez is an innings eater, finished in the top 20 in innings last year, great ratios, and a super stable guy to solidify what your rotation looks like. So I like Marco a lot. I think he's going overlooked. I've drafted him a bunch this year. Maybe I'm the moron and, I'm overlooking what I should be doing with a guy like that. But he's not the sharpest name. He has a max pick of 252 so far. So, I mean, he goes very late at times. But he's one that I love just a ton. And I don't know, Brock, if you have any shares of Marco Gonzalez or if he is too boring for you. But or for Matthew, but I like him a lot. What about you guys?
Yeah, I like Marco. I really do. I don't know that I have any shares of him this year, but I will tell you, I had him on 3, maybe even 4 squads last year. I ended up with him in a lot of places last year. Where he was getting drafted last year, he was free, and he really paid off in a big way last year. So I think 2 pods ago, we talked a little bit about these kinds of things. Where in a season where we're really projecting a lot of pitchers for over the course of a full season, you know, 110, 120 yeah. innings, you know, a talented pitcher like Sixto Sanchez, and we're talking about 140 innings, you know, a lot of guys like that. And this is a situation where Marco, you know, I know that they've talked about doing the 6-man rotation with Seattle. We're pretty sure they're going to do it. But, you know, Marco's one of the handful of guys in the game that will go out there and stands a chance to go out there and throw 7 or 8 innings. I think he even had a couple complete games last year yeah. when, like, the entire league combined for a couple complete games last year. So, you know, Marco's one of those guys that, you know, maybe the rate stats aren't really there, but if he's going to pitch way more innings than everybody else, guess what? The counting stats will kind of get there in the end. So I like Marco. I had him a lot last year just because, you know, he was so cheap. And it's funny you talked about him being – an ex-Cardinals, one of my buddies, you know, Brad, he's a Cardinals fan. And, you know, he was a big fan of Marco when he was coming up. And I remember, you know, before he arrived in St. Louis, looking up his numbers, like, this guy doesn't miss bats in AAA. What's he going to do at the big league level?
Right.
And, you know, after, you know, watching him for a year and a half, and then we got into draft season last year, I had changed my mind on Marco. So I like that call there. Maddie, do you have anything to reflect on Marco?
Yeah, I'll play devil's advocate here. You mentioned the volume and him just being, you know, this big monster of eating innings, which rightly so per, you know, per inning or per start, he could be one of the higher guys up there. But you did mention that they also want to roll out a 6-man rotation. And as of right now, it looks like they have, you know, the people to do so. But with that being said, a lot of six-man rotations don't pan out for a full season. But as of right now, I think that, you know, that's going to be a cause of concern. You're not going to be getting two-inning starts, so, you know, theoretically, from Marco Gonzalez. And if you're not able to get those two-start weeks, you know, every 5 weeks or whatever it is, that's going to be an issue. You're not going to be able to accumulate enough strikeouts to get to where you want to get to. The team context isn't that great. I don't like to project wins, but that's something that can, you know, be a ding there. And then the ratios are going to be good. I love that he doesn't walk people. I think that that's just the biggest highlighter for me right there is he's not putting people on base. He's not getting hit hard, not giving up a lot of home runs. Those are all great, great, great things, but I'm going to need to know that he's going out every fifth day, not every sixth or seventh day, you know, given with a day off in the schedule, and that he has the opportunity to have, you know, two steps every once in a while. And if it doesn't work out that way, then I think that you could be a little bit bummed, because these six-man rotations are going to be really frustrating. What if Marco, you know, in week three, what if he's the Sunday starter? And, you know, they're facing whomever and, you know, just rain delays and stuff like that. And I don't know. It just makes things a little tricky for me when setting starting pitchers in the NFBC format, where you got to start them right when that, you know, the lineup's locked. So I'm a little tepid. I won't lie. But it's from maybe mitigating that volume that you guys are talking about. I'm not sure that I'm necessarily completely sold on that. You know, especially bringing in Pax and a guy like that, it maybe tells you that they really are wanting to do a six-man rotation.
Yeah, and definitely, you know, Marco coming in there, I see him about top 15, top 12 in quality of command per those rankings over on theathletic.com. So yeah, kind of backs up what you're saying there. Marco, I think at the absolute worst, if everything goes wrong with Marco, he's still a solid starter. I think there's very little risk there. He's stayed healthy his entire career. I think there's definitely more positives there than there are negatives, but those are real negatives that you pointed out to us there, Maddie. So thanks for that one.
I think it increases his range of outcomes. So the ceiling, you know, on innings pitched might be a little bit limited. You know, maybe that decreases a little bit with the noise of a six-man rotation. And if the six-man rotation only sticks for a month, you know, knock on wood, hopefully nobody gets hurt. But if James Paxton goes down or whoever else goes down, maybe they're not able to win. Maybe they're not able to, you know, deploy that six-man rotation. But if it goes a month, you've already missed a month of potential two-steps and stuff like that. And somebody like that, you know, look at a Zach Greinke, look at a Kyle Hendricks, look at a Zach Wheeler. No, he's not costing the same, but you're kind of wanting to throw him in a similar bucket like that. But these guys are going to get those opportunities all season. You know,
the goat Zach Davies of the Chicago Cubs.
Yeah, another similar guy. So, you know, it's just it with the noise of the six-man rotation. If it only sticks for 4 weeks, you're already kind of, you're missing out on a little bit of that volume, right? And it adds up. It adds up, especially for somebody that you need to be an accumulator.
Yeah. Well, I'm not worried. And this is another guy that I think – this is Brock.
I don't know what's happening with Matt right now. So we might have lost him. There you are.
Sorry about that. I don't know what happened. The number
write
one
down that timestamp.
No, you're fine. The number one starting pitcher for the Miami Marlins. Are you guys ready?
Sure.
ADP 515.07, Trevor Rogers.
Oh, Rogers, okay.
Trevor Rogers, left-handed pitcher. I'm a bit tongue-in-cheek there. I like the whole staff. I think there's some guys you know, we talked about Sixto early in the show, Pablo Lopez, super high, Sandy Alcantara, former Cardinal, works deep in games. I like Trevor Rogers a lot. I also like Eliezer Hernandez a lot. I mean, there's a lot of guys to like. Left-handed pitcher, great command, whiffed 10 Rays in a season or in a start at the end of the year last year. Was always dinged for only being a fastball changeup guy in the minors. Then he flashed a plus slider at the end of the year that generated just a ton of whiffs. So he's my guy late that I don't know that Brock T, kind of your overall premise, maybe jumps you up super high into that category, but I really think he's actually going to be extremely good. Now, to what Matthew said on projecting wins, that's a really hard one to predict, and I think that NL East is a tough division to figure out, you know, who wins that division. It's probably going to be the Phillies or the Braves. The Mets have obviously have a great offense, and they've taken some steps. Marlins are going to be locked into 80 games that are tough, but I really, really like Trevor Rogers. I've got a lot of shares in him in 15-teamers. I don't know if you guys have any of him or not, but I'm all in on throwing a dart there. And I do think he wins a rotation spot, and I think he's going to be very valuable.
I don't have any yet, but I've been trying to get some. I moved him up my board quite a bit. Saw some interesting stuff last season in his debut, but certainly the stuff's there. There's a lot of things to, you know, make you think that he's going to really put together something that, you know, not really to get off point here, but it just kind of dawned on me, you know, all these other teams are talking about going to a six-man rotation, and the Marlins have a couple guys that I think they want to limit their innings. Elizer Hernandez, I don't know how much, you know, how committed to him they are, or how badly they want him to throw 160 yeah. innings. And we talked about, you know, Sixto is obviously going to be limited. Rogers probably somebody that could stand to be limited. Right? And
yeah,
well, they could do their sixth starter. You know, Braxton Miller.
I
have him on my board, and they even have Edward Cabrera was somebody that I drafted early on thinking I was going to be sneaky, and then he's already hurt, unfortunately. But, you know, I think the Marlins could do that six-man rotation to a level of success. I mean, obviously, Rogers, their number one prospect, and or they're you know, one of their better pitching prospects. Of course, Sixto is the number one prospect there. But I think they could do the six-man rotation with some really talented arms there, and I'm kind of curious why we haven't even seen that idea floated. So probably a question for Craig Mish, you know, the Marlins writer there, who I kind of wanted to give a shout out. You know, Craig Mish, super cool. You know, the industry has tons of beat writers. And then, of course, our industry has a bunch of fantasy baseball guys here. And we've got a little bit of an overlap there. You know, Craig Mish, legit beat writer. Also is in which league was he in over the weekend? Didn't they draft like Tout Wars or something, and he's in it or something?
Oh, I don't know. Matthew might know.
Craig Mish, though, Marlins beat writer, is also definitely certified fantasy baseball dude. So that was kind of cool. Wanted to mention that.
Nice.
Okay, I like that call from Rogers. Definitely a high upside arm there for the Marlins, and you know, looking like he's got a good inside track at a job there. So going to my picks for these,
Wait. Y'all didn't let me chime in here.
Oh yeah, we're gonna hear about Rogers.
Well, yeah. I gotta throw a bucket of water on your guys' bonfire that you're having for Rogers right now, right? So you know, we've seen 136 innings pitched in 2019 through the minors. That's great. So he could get to that 150 threshold, theoretically. The concerns I do have, he averaged 4 innings per start last year. So he's not going deep into games. That is going to potentially limit or cap the upside, you know, in wins. So that's just something right there. And then the uncertainty of volume. But like Matt said, you're taking this shot so late. The ADP over the last 2 weeks, it is rising. It's up to 423 over the last 2 weeks in Draft Champions. Potentially, it's going to go up a little bit more. You'll see him go in the later rounds of NFBC main event drafts as people are taking those, you know, high strikeout upside pitchers, taking those flyers late. But I would just, you know, tepid my expectations due to the ceiling when it comes to volume. But I do like the stuff. The stuff is nice.
Okay. All right. So I think that ties down Rogers. We've got all the angles on him. So we've talked about 4 guys here that we like quite a bit. I'm going to put 2 more into the mix. For the first one, don't call me a Dodgers homer. I mean, obviously I'm a Dodgers fan, but Julio Urias. And just for the sake of respect, I'm going to refer to him as Julio from here on out. I did my best there to do his last name justice there, but I just happened to be the whitest guy that ever existed, and it's really hard for me to try to get his name right. So I did my best there, but Julio, so looking back at his last few years, and of course, this is not like a new story. Everybody knows the story of Urias over the years. You know, came up to the Dodgers. I watched him out at spring training when he was 17 years old. Very super exciting stuff there. I believe he struck out the side against the White Sox. He started that game, only pitched that first inning. But anyways, getting back to his big league performance, you know, last year, he was really good. The run prevention was great last year, only 3.27 ERA, which was pretty decent for him, but not great. The strikeouts were down for him compared to his career. But, you know, something that I think we should probably look into doing when we're looking at 2020 numbers, we can include the postseason a little bit. We should probably at least take it into consideration, if not just straight include it in our formulas for our projections. But, you know, in the postseason, 11.3 strikeouts per nine, 1.5 walks per nine. I mean, he was electric in the postseason, 1.2 ERA. He was really good. And those numbers kind of, if you look at his 2020 numbers and you include his postseason performance, the strikeout rates kind of fall in line with the strikeout rates that we saw, you know, from him in years previous. Something that he did a little bit differently in 2020, he kind of ditched the slider. That was up to 17% usage in a small sample size in 2019. But in 2020, really started working in that curveball, 25% usage rate in 2020 for the curveball. And I like the curveball because he throws his change at about 85 miles an hour. And I think maybe a little bit of a problem that he was having beforehand was, you know, he's got that 95 mile an hour fastball, and that's great. But when you're throwing an 85 mile an hour slider, and then you're throwing like an 84 mile an hour changeup, you know, those pitches, obviously the movement's going in different directions there. That changeup for a left-handed pitcher is going to have that arm side run. And then of course the slider is going to be your glove side run. You know, those are different pitches, but at least if they're coming in at the same speed, then that's like one less element to the pitch that you're where they're overlapping, where a hitter can kind of, you know, he's picking between 95 miles an hour and 85 miles an hour. But the curveball that he throws is, you know, 80 miles an hour or less. So that's just kind of another layer to the fold when you're facing Urias. And I think that's going to contribute to his success going forward. You know, the biggest thing, you know, the limiting upside to Urias is how many innings they're going to allow him to pitch this year. You know, we've seen him as far back as 2016. This is going to be kind of his sixth year that we've at least seen him on the big league roster here. But, you know, this is somebody who's barely over 200 innings for his entire career. So, but you put it all together, I think if we can, you know, get 130 innings out of him, which might even be ambitious when you compare that to the projections, it probably is. But when you take a look at the quality of stuff and the quality of command, you know, I've mentioned Eno's list before, and I've been leaning on that probably a little bit more than, you know, Maddie, maybe a little bit more than some of these other guys have been leaning on it when they're doing their drafts. But really high marks for Urias, inside the top 30 in both of those marks. So, you know, a consistent pitcher there. I like Urias. And, you know, another thing, we get real caught up in the numbers here, and of course for good reason, but a little bit of a narrative there. I can definitely see a kid who's had the ups and downs that he's had, you know, domestic abuse in the past there, but then also all the different injuries and the different surgeries he's gone through. You know, the kid's gone through a lot, and you know, we're still talking about a very talented 24-year-old pitcher here. I don't think he's quite peaked yet, and you know, maybe coming off of a huge performance in the postseason is just a little bit more confidence that he needs to fully realize his potential. So Urias, that's kind of my earlier guy that I think has a chance to really, you know, it's going to be tough for him to return true ace value. You know, when we're only looking at like 130 innings, when those aces are going to be still pitching that 170 innings, it's going to be tough to make it happen. But I think, you know, in a league, if he's missing some time, however they're going to go about limiting that, those innings down to 130, if you're replacing him for a couple of weeks with a suitable streamer, I think you can get pretty good value out of Urias where he's been drafted, which is the one thing out of all these 10 million things I wrote down in my paper where he's being drafted right now was not one of them.
You wrote down all this stuff and you mentioned multiple injuries, but it was really only the shoulder surgery, and that was back in 2019. And one thing that proves to me now that we're going into the third year of being removed from that injury is 2018, we saw that fastball velocity in 2017. So in 2016, it was 92. 27, it was 93. 2018 was 93. Yeah, so now 2019 is 95. In 2020, it averaged at 94.2. And then you talked about the increase in curveball. I haven't heard a lot of people talking about this, and maybe because they don't watch every pitch like you and I do when it comes to Julio Urias. But, the curveball is sick. And that's how you're supposed to say it, my man. But that's a differential of 14 to 15 ticks off the fastball. And it still has a 5 mile per hour differential to the changeup. I just think that he is ready to really, really, really bust out in a serious way. Everything here checks off the box for me. I think the strikeout rate is probably going to get back in line to 2019, so north of 25%. You've got a stellar walk rate, career underneath 10%. This dude does not get hit hard. His hard hit career rate is 27.1%. His career barrel rate allowed is 4.2%. He's not going to kill you. And so some people are going to talk about how many innings is he going to pitch? How many innings will he pitch per game? For me, I don't care. I want quality here, and you're going to get it. Similarly with Dustin May and Tony Gonsolin. When they are pitching, they are not going to hurt you. There are going to be other guys that are going to be drafted ahead of them, someone like Dylan Bundy, that can potentially hurt you in a severe way while giving you the volume that you're asking for. But if it's bad volume, then it's not volume that I want at all. So give me the guys that are going to provide the quality like Urias. So, yeah,
a quick little underline to one of your points there about him getting hit hard. A 5% barrel rate last year, 2019, 79 innings, a 4.3 percent barrel rate. I mean, literally a handful of pitchers have lower barrel rates than this guy. So definitely limiting the hard contact there. And then somebody that, you know, it's kind of crazy, you know, usually the high barrel rates are fly ball pitchers, just because those guys that ground ball pitchers give up so few fly balls. And for a ball to be a barrel, it has to be hit in the air. You know, ground balls don't count. It doesn't matter how hard you hit it, you're not going to get a barrel for hitting a ball on the ground. But Urias, despite being a fly ball pitcher, that low barrel rate, and then, you know, we're still kind of waiting to see what happens with this new ball, if it's going to, you know, suppress home runs even a little bit more. I mean, you know, not that that's something that Urias needs help with anyways, but so.
A career infield fly ball rate nearly of 13%. Yeah, now add so an infield fly ball rate, that's pretty much an out, right?
Yeah,
that's an out. Now add the strikeout rate, career 23%, so now 36%. You got the fly ball infield fly ball rate, the strikeout rate working for you. He also, you know, one last thing real quick, he kind of did something similar like Zach Eflin. He wasn't getting results from the slider, so he ditched it a bit. It dipped down 12% last year compared to 2019, so from 17.3% to 5.5%. And then, you know, he used that curveball more. The curveball was not, you know, part of his repertoire really in 2019, where he used it only 6.1% of the time. People aren't going to prepare for that. But at nearly 25% in 2020, he's found an adjustment. It's legit. It's real. The organization that he pitches with, the teammates and pitchers around him, you're going to get nothing but goodness.
Yeah, should be able to squeeze a couple wins out of that offense. Matt, do you have anything to add to the Julio Urias here, or are we free to move forward? What do you think?
Yeah, I mean, just the only thing for me is it's the harder thing is just figuring out all the starters in Los Angeles. But, I mean, I think you guys are spot on with the talents there, the pitch mix changes there. I think he's primed for a big 2021 for sure.
Yeah.
And things are trending in the right direction. Baseball is trending in the right direction for him to be more lucrative and more profitable. So 2017, 5.51 innings pitched per game start, then 5.36, then 5.18. Last year it was 4.73. Pitches per game start in 2017, 91.5. Then it went to 88.1, 86.4, and then in 2020, 77.8. If that's now the mean, he's going to be above that threshold. And then you're going to add in the quality per that threshold, and it's nasty.
Okay, so my list, getting my next guy here, going through back my many pages of notes because I'm a nerd and I write stuff down on paper like an old man. So my kind of thresholds that I used to look up the pitchers that I was considering for this spot, and this is kind of, you know, guys, this is, you know, the guy that I'm predicting has a chance to be 2021's Corbin Burnes. You know, obviously odds are we're not going to pick this year's Corbin Burnes, but that's what we're taking a stab at with this, with our second picks here. So I was going to look at guys that were kind of falling through the cracks here. You know, we all have our projections and we kind of, you know, I know a lot of people, probably not just me, you know, produce like an auction value for a lot of players. And we kind of put our, you know, that's how we kind of order these guys. And, you know, so some guys that are projected for really good ratios, but maybe only projected for like 80 innings. I wanted to sort out the guys that were going to be relief pitchers. You know, there's obviously plenty of guys that are going to have great ratios that are pitching out of the bullpen. So I wanted to sort out for that. So the bottom end of my my threshold for innings was, you know, guys that are projected for 80 innings or more. So 80 is the minimum there. But also guys that don't like necessarily have a spot, or just guys that aren't getting drafted inside the top 300. And I had a few guys here on my list. Brubaker, as I mentioned, was one of them. Somebody like there. Somebody else that we might talk about who happens to wear a Cardinals uniform also made my list, but ultimately was not my pick. I liked Randy Dobnak, but he's just not going to strike out anybody. I really like that good defense that he has behind him now in Minnesota. Donaldson at third, should he stay healthy for any period of time. And then, of course, Andrelton Simmons at shortstop. That should be helpful to Dobnak, who's one of the few guys. I mean, he's basically Dallas Keuchel, but I think he's right-handed. But anyways, whatever. Doesn't fucking matter. I didn't pick him for this spot. I'm going to move on. AJ Puck, somebody that I think is, you know, got great stuff there. There's already conflicting reports. He's not going to start the season in the rotation there, but he'll eventually get in the rotation. Definitely a lot of upside there, but, you know, some guy that, you know, he kind of only has, you know, three pitches. That's kind of the bottom end of what I'm looking at there. I'd kind of prefer somebody have a little bit more to offer than that. And, you know, somebody that I'm not going to pick for this spot here, Derek Turnbull or Spencer Turnbull, you know, somebody that we've seen a lot on Twitter the last couple days, but, you know, somebody that we've have seen on Twitter a lot the last couple days. When I came up with this, and look, guys, I swear to God, this was like Friday night. I was sitting here on the computer super late. I stayed up. I was on Google Earth for a little while. I was like doing street view in like Scandinavian countries and just kind of like zoning out and checking out shit. But then I was like switching over to baseball analysis, and then I switched back over to Google Earth. I was digging, and I came up with TJ Anton, pitcher for the Cincinnati Reds. Somebody that the more I got to digging, the more I was like looking at the stuff, and I was trying to, like, you know, a lot of people have access to the projections and stuff, but I was trying to like look at more like the stuff. You know, this guy's got a great slider. He's got a plus curveball. He's got a plus fastball. He throws hard enough. The command is good enough there. He's kind of shows up pretty high on Eno's rankings. You know, he's kind of checking all the boxes, right? So, you know, three plus pitches, shows up on Eno's rankings, projected for good ratios, just doesn't quite have the innings. You know, he's like an injury away from, you know, he's kind of like Tony Gonsolin, like an injury away from like, bam, like a solid number three starter, and you got to draft him in like, you know, the 400th overall spot. You know, this is, which is basically what Corbin Burns was, somebody that we didn't know a whole lot about. We just know that he had great stuff last year, but he didn't necessarily have a spot. And, you know, those things, as Matty says, kind of tend to work themselves out over time. So that's where I am on TJ Anton. I'm not going to spend a whole lot of time on him because since Friday when I decided he was my guy for this spot, like nine people have published write-ups. I think the RotoWire podcast talked about him quite a bit, and those guys do a fantastic job. So TJ Anton is my guy here, and apparently he is like half of Twitter's guy as well.
Yeah, I was going to say, I'm not going to disagree with you, and I think that with the recent and current news that we're seeing with the Cincinnati Reds, more relievers going down, he's still an uncertain commodity, but he's a commodity for sure. And I don't think that he is going to hurt you whatsoever because of the quality that he is going to be putting up when he is on the mound. With that being said, if you want to dig in and look at all the stuff that people are saying, go to Twitter, type in TJ Anton, and you'll get all the information and data as to why Brock is intrigued with him. I've got somebody similar as well. But maybe he didn't pop to you and you actually did not mention him. And maybe that's because Eno Saris doesn't have, you know, the quality of stuff in the Command Plus built in for the Michael Kopech. He is going to be coming into a long relief, multiple inning role for the Chicago White Sox this year. All reports are just amazing right now coming out of Chicago White Sox camp. He's on board with what's going on, but he has mentioned that he would still love to be a starter, which that's obviously the plan later on for the Chicago White Sox. But you've got guys, you know, that he could come in, fill in, and rack up a bunch of wins while just a huge strikeout, you know, upside as well. So when looking at him, going to his projections right now, I have Kopech projected for 95 innings with 104 strikeouts and some decent ratios there as well. So he's somebody that I would be looking to hopefully he cracks the rotation at some point. So right now they have Carlos Rodon scheduled to be their fifth starter. We know that his health and injury history in the past is not stellar, to say the least. So I don't expect him to pitch a full season. And if things are going well for Michael Kopech, sure, maybe they do call. Maybe they do fill it in with Reynaldo Lopez next. But I think that there's going to come a time and place, regardless of it being in long relief, multiple inning roles, high leverage situations, or if it's, you know, he's the second or third guy that gets the shot at the fifth starter role in Chicago. His time is going to come. But whatever it may be, Michael Kopech is going to be a solid pitcher for you this year.
Are we worried at all about with a guy like Kopech or Marcus Stroman that took a year off of baseball? Like, are we worried at all?
No, I'm not worried about Stroman at all. Gimme if you want to go down that rabbit hole. I don't really want to spill my beans on him, but go look at my rankings. You can find those. I don't even want to give it away. If you want to know where I have Marcus Stroman projected and ranked, go to FTNFantasy.com, 1999. No, I don't know. I'm not concerned at Marcus Stroman at all. What do you mean?
Well, I mean, as a former college pitcher, when I took time off at all, it totally messed with me. Taking a year off facing hitters seems like a big deal.
Sure. And how are the data and how's the velocity and how's his pitch mix?
I mean,
how's all that going? And now he's mixing in a new pitch, which is the usage there. It looks pretty good to me. And now you're looking at a person, Phil Dussault has done, who better known as the Robot, shout out to him, please follow him on Twitter, has done amazing research on pitchers that could lose a whole season from Tommy John or something else even, or have 70, you know, innings pitched the season prior, they can get ramped right back up to 200-plus innings pitched. No problem when you're a professional starting major league pitcher. We have seen multiple 200-plus innings pitched out years from him, 204, 201. In 2019, he had 184, which was still stellar for me. You are going to be getting somebody draft Marcus Stroman. I have no concerns with Marcus Stroman. Absolutely zero. I'm all in. I love him. Give me.
I think that's a big mistake. I just don't get it. I mean,
How many innings did you pitch in college or whatever? Was it 160, 70, 80 innings? Did you work out like a major league pitcher? Was your conditioning like a major league pitcher? Were you doing off-season regimens like Marcus Stroman's probably been doing for the last, 18 months? I think it's just a little bit different, bud.
I mean, I think it is, but I think it's insulting to say, is it different? Yes, I pitched 100 innings. We worked out all year. I just think not throwing at all is something to think about. That's all.
You don't think
I just,
he was throwing? You think he was sitting on the couch doing nothing? Not using his shoulder, his arm, his mechanics, his torque, his balance? You think Marcus Stroman is lazy? Because he's not. Look at his fucking dad.
I mean, I guess he got crushed in his first start. I mean, he got destroyed. So does it not
matter? Yeah, he's mixing in a new pitch. You don't think he's trying to figure things out?
I think at the very least, there's something that we can all definitely agree on is that Marcus Stroman is cool as fuck.
Yeah, for sure. And now you're throwing him for the first time. You're taking him out of Toronto. You're taking him out of the AL East. You're putting him in Citi Field. You're now getting the National League DH pitcher. He's going to a rotation that has a guy named Jacob deGrom that's, going to be nice to work with as well. I have no concerns when it comes to longevity and mileage for him at all. I think he is going to be one of your bigger workhorses this year. And then on top of that, I think that you're going to be getting somebody that is adjusting in the right direction and is going to improve upon his meager strikeout rate, a career of 19.6. You're going to see it north of that this year.
Yeah. You know what? Yeah. I mean, I think it is a good point. He has thrown a lot of innings. He's kind of been at least reliable to do that in the past, after losing 2020 entirely. I'm trying to look because I don't know why it took me this long for it to dawn on me. He's leaving Toronto and going to New York, which is a bit of a pitcher's park. I mean, left-handed batters do okay there, but trying to look through. Okay, so ground ball rate, okay, 60%, 62%, so pretty extreme ground ball pitcher there. Getting out of Toronto, and I mean, I think
look at his career barrel rate.
A pitcher with a 62% ground ball rate, which is for context, there's like I mentioned, Randy Dobnak, and then Dallas Keuchel. I mean, there's like five pitchers ahead of him probably with a 62% ground ball rate. So getting out of an infield like Toronto, where they have that artificial surface in Toronto.
Did they have Francisco Lindor at shortstop as well?
Yeah, no doubt. A better defensive infield behind him, and also just having like a real actual grass infield around an extreme ground ball pitcher. I'm not sure why that didn't occur to me, but that seems like a pretty decent upgrade for Stroman.
Yeah, and then you want to bake in the home run per fly ball, per nine at 0.83 for his career in that park. Dude, he doesn't give lift on the ball at all. He's trying. He wants to become a strikeout guy too. He's expressing this. Look at him on Twitter. He's hungry. He's ready to feast.
I want to underline how cool he is on Twitter.
He's motivated. I think you got it all wrong there, dude. And where you're looking at it costs, you could potentially be getting a volume guy with good ratios, and then he's working on getting more strikeouts. And now, Matt, I've got a strong disagree with you there.
I think it's wrong, but it's fine.
We can do like I always do when I get confident, and you can slide into my DMs, and we can make some sort of side bet if you want.
I think we have a Stroman wager brewing upon us here.
I think David Price is a risk. I think Marcus Stroman's a risk. I hope to be wrong. I hope all these guys are awesome. I have risk in my mind. That's all.
Yeah, definitely wave.
Yeah, and sometimes though, when you have those risks or you're waiting to see it, right? You want to wait to see it. Well, you waited too long already. That's the problem. He's going to be a breakout pitcher.
So last thing I had on my list for my beautiful podcast that I designed for us to record this evening, a late pitcher that you think, I mean, this doesn't have to be drafting Corbin Burns in the 47th round, not quite like that, but you know, if you're drafting somebody in the 47th round that you like use, you're making money, right? You're ahead of the game there. So maybe somebody you can draft in the 47th round that if they're in your rotation for half the season, I think that that's a nice target. I know, Maddie, you don't do a whole lot of these DCs, and I do. So this is probably something where I've been in this scenario and I've had to draft, look for and try to draft these guys over the last few weeks, maybe a little bit more than me. But, you know, given that outline, who's somebody that maybe comes to mind for you there?
Okay, so I'm digging deep here. ADP of 491. Does that count?
Yeah, I like it. Yeah, absolutely.
Okay, let's go with Josh Fleming of the Tampa Bay Rays. I think that he could be, how they used to deploy with Ryan Yarbrough. I think that he could come into some profitable situations here with the Tampa Bay Rays. He's a solid pitcher, and you don't have to pay anything for him. I don't think he's going to kill you. So when talking about somebody that's going to be giving you quality instead of quantity, he's one of those guys for me. So I think that he could just pick up those cheap wins for you, to be honest with you. I think that that's what I would be looking for out of Josh Fleming. It's nothing sexy. I don't think that you're getting a huge strikeout monster or anything like that. But with the team context and the way that they do things, if he's potentially a follower in that rotation, you know, piggybacking somebody, then you could be in for, you know, a nice bargain there to get some wins.
Yeah, Josh Fleming, somebody that the general manager of the Tampa Bay Rays was being interviewed during their spring training game, I think like on Monday or something like that. And he was somebody that he mentioned in that interview and kind of called him out as like essentially called him one of their starters going forward. So, you know, anytime you can get somebody, you know, around pick number 500, who's going to be in a rotation, and then of course, didn't hurt that Fleming's not a bad pitcher. And just to give a little bit of context to you guys listening, other pitchers going in that 500 range, you know, Stephen Brault, another pitcher for the Pirates that I don't really hate, but Brent Suter, nobody cares. Alex Cobb, weird, looks kind of interesting. He pitched today and actually looked good, but Danny Duffy sucks. Chris Bubich, there's a couple other guys in that 500 range. And there's a guy in that 500 range from the St. Louis Cardinals that I think maybe Matt might be on in this for this pick.
Yeah, Daniel Ponce de Leon. I mean,
487, yep.
Yeah, Miles Michaelis is having trouble getting back from his arm injuries. He has not thrown that I have seen yet. He's still working his way back. Carlos Martinez has been horrible in spring training so far this year. I mean, there's two rotation spots. That's not even factoring in Adam Wainwright is 40 or 41 at this point. And don't get me wrong, I like Adam Wainwright, but there clearly appears to be an opportunity. Ponce de Leon, the problem with him has always been walk rate. It's not been swing and miss. He was outstanding. So for me, he is the total punt dart throw Brock in this range. I like him a lot. And, I think the NL Central in general is still a very weak offensive division. So depending on the schedule matches up, I think he could be, you know, a very positive play for you.
Yeah, so if you guys will check your text message thread with the three of us, the FTN text message thread that we have, I sent you a picture of my notes that I made on Friday night. And
there he is, Kopech.
Hey, Michael Kopech's on there, Ponce de Leon, Brubaker. This makes me happy. I did some research, and the guys that were kind of standing out to me are guys that are standing out to you guys as well. So that makes me feel good about my research here. So I definitely like that call. Ponce de Leon, definitely two above average pitches. Maybe if he gets that third pitch, that's going to be a difference maker for him. So I like those calls.
I'm in on Ponce de Leon as well. I like that call, definitely.
Yeah. So my dart throw here is somebody that I am checking a draft room right now because I am going to take him with my next pick here, as long as Vlad didn't steal him from me, which Vlad has been stealing everybody from me in this draft, driving me nuts. But Mike Foltynewicz, who was, I think, was getting drafted top 100 in 2018, had a big year in 2017, and then just completely lost his shit. He lost his command. I think I've read some stories. He just kind of psychologically was losing it a little bit, went through some rough patches there. I don't know. Just kind of speculation because I don't really recall what I was reading there. But, a lot of shit happened for Mike Foltynewicz. So somebody that we definitely know has the physical capabilities of going out and throwing 96 miles an hour and missing some bats. We've had an ace season from him in years past. And, sometimes when we're looking at like these dart throws, we're trying to pick from a list of pitchers, and we're trying to pick guys that we're hoping can go out and do something that they've never done before. And in most circumstances, we're trying to pick somebody who's never even done anything as close to what we're hoping that they're going to do, going out and being, a top 75 pitcher for 3 months or something like that is just way above the heads of most of these guys that we're drafting in the 47th round of these crazy drafts or whatever. But Mike Foltynewicz is somebody where, he's done it before. You know, the one thing we do know about him is he has the ability to do it. Taking a late dart throw on him and just seeing if he can, kind of get some of that back. And then just like that, you've caught lightning in a bottle. Somebody else that's kind of a similar situation for me. And then I was trying to look up some news for him real quick and didn't find it. Madison Bumgarner threw two good innings in spring, which if you saw him pitch at all last year, seeing him throw two good innings is like, absolutely insane compared to how bad he looked last year. I don't think you're getting that ace back, but, that's just another guy that was a top 100 pick like 2 years ago. And then, after two bad months, they were definitely bad. He went out there every start, got his dick smashed or walked everybody. It was really ugly. But if he gets a little bit of that back where he's being drafted, he's definitely somebody that we can get a little bit of profit. I had a couple other ideas to add into this show. We are pushing an hour and 45 minutes. I think we're going to call it good. What do you guys think?
I want to touch on Mike Folti before we get out of here real quick. So the major concern here is he was a high velocity guy, right? And then last year after he got cut by the Braves, he felt weak, he was fatigued. People kind of had some concerns of some offseason issues or outside baseball world, issues. Was throwing a very low 90s fastball. He faced the Dodgers the other day. Hit 96, hit 97. Was sitting 95, nothing hit below 94. Got Gavin Lux to strike out on a slider because the fastball was exploding. So maybe he is back. If that velo is back up, they've got a nice park to pitch in there in Texas. They're going to give him all the chances in the world. He's on that one-year, $2 million prove-it deal. If things can work out, then I think he got something there. I'll be rooting
for him. His career really depends on it. He's 29 and a half. If he can't put something together this year, I think he's kind of – he's probably out of baseball after the last two seasons that he's had there. So,
yeah, good call. All right. Well, we did it. Thank you guys for listening. Please subscribe, rate, and review to our podcast if you haven't already. If you guys have any questions that you want to be answered on the show or just even on Twitter, DM me, DM Matt, DM Brock, or ask us publicly on Twitter, and we'll answer that question on the podcast for you. Guys, thank you so much for listening. Is there anything else, Brock and Matt, that you want to say before getting out of here?
No, I just I appreciate you guys kind of letting me take the lead with this one, come up with the idea and work through it and stumble my way through it. I enjoyed recording this one. And that's it for me.
Yep, I'm good.
Awesome. Well, thank you guys so much, and we will be back next week. And then, yeah, stay tuned for that NFBC main event party on 320.
Hell yeah.
Bye.
Thanks for tuning in to this episode of the FTN Fantasy Baseball Podcast with the two Matts. Please rate, subscribe, and review the podcast, and we hope you listen again soon.